Identity Theft, Part 1. It's June and I can't wait for our new crepe myrtle to bloom. I've forgotten the variety of our new crepe myrtle. I could ask my wife. But by not knowing the name of our new crepe myrtle, I don't know the color of its blooms, which only adds to my excitement. Not only that, my wife said I can have another gazing ball to complement our new crepe myrtle. Plus, we have a conspicuous gap in our hydrangeas. I once climbed the Grand Teton. Part 2. One day a man is walking his dog through a leafy park when he sees a girl with a snake around her neck. The snake's name is Noah. Noah the boa. Only the man doesn't know Noah the boa's name when he finds himself forming some pretty definite opinions about the girl with purple-black hair and skin the color of no color whatsoever, excluding the surfeit of tattoos, the gold and silver rings and pins on her pale canvas. But the thing about this man, opinions or not, he can't help but talk. In addition to Noah's name, he learns Noah's body temperature approximates surrounding air. So, no, Noah doesn't cool the girl on hot days. Surprisingly, the girl works at the psychiatric hospital through the leafy trees where she takes Noah on her days off to cheer the cheerless. Also, Noah, the 23-year-old affectionate boa, came from a rosy boa rescue, which makes him feel not so rosy, the man, since now all of his pretty definite opinions are pretty definitely wrong. Soon the man is expressing his displeasure with the frisbee golf course that violates the leafy trees, when, despite their disparity in age, pets, skin tone, etc., the girl suddenly says, "I feel ya." To which the clueless man replies, "No thanks." Some days the man feels like a nameless crepe myrtle that has forgotten the color of its blooms. Part 3. My grandma Mabel had an aunt named Myrtle. Part 4. It's 1969 and I'm at a Nashville honky-tonk with my friend Norman. Norman and I are 18. In 4 years, Norman will become a Nashville cop. One night, he'll pull me over in my Pinto and ask to see my license. "Hey, Norman, it's me," I'll say. But tonight, Norman already has a license and a social security card for one William B. Robinson, age 21 plus. "Why, you boys have the same name," our waitress says after careful study. Norman will matriculate to Vanderbilt Law. He'll become a prominent defense attorney. "We're fraternal twins," Norman tells the waitress. "I'm William Butler Robinson, and he's my brother, William Blake." "Yeah, and I'm Tammy Wynette," the waitress says. Part 5. My mother's maiden name was Angel, Martha Jean Angel. "I was an angel before I met your dad," my mother liked to say. Part 6. One day the man is stopped at a stoplight near the leafy park, where he seems to spend a lot of time, when he notices a girl in a giant red pickup with a young man's hands around her neck. The young man's name is Tim. Tim as in, "Get your hands off me, Tim!" Tim. Once again, the man finds himself forming some pretty definite opinions when the girl jumps from the giant red pickup and starts running down the leafy street, and Tim jumps from the giant red pickup and starts running down the leafy street, too. Naturally, the man can't help but talk. But this time his talking must wait until the light turns green and he drives around the block listening to someone say, "You just can't drive away, you miserable coward," bearing in mind there is no one with him in his car. Later that night he tells his wife what he did say after he rounds the block and follows the reoccupied giant red pickup to emergency parking at a nearby hospital, which doesn't make the miserable coward feel any less miserable or cowardly. Part 7. Man. knocking on passenger side window of a giant red pickup. "Are you okay?" Girl, rolling down window. "Yes, thanks." Tim, jumping from driver's side of the giant red pickup, siren blaring in the background. "Who the hell are you?" Man, "I just wanted to make sure she's okay." Tim, bawling his fists. "You might want to leave us alone, M-blank, F-blank." Man, "I just want to make sure you're both okay." Later that day, wife, watering blue hydrangeas. "He never would have hit someone your age." Part 8. Some days it seems impossible to the man that he is 23 in rosy boy years, that no one will ever hit him hard right between the eyes. Part 9. If you don't know me by now, you will never, never, never know me. Ooh, 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 ooh. Part 10. If the last 23 years were an illusion, Simply Red would be singing If You Don't Know Me By Now, Noah the Boa would be about 7 inches long, and I would be showing this poem to my gentle friend and mentor, the exquisite formalist poet, Mike Carson, who would undoubtedly return it to me with the word decorum written in the right-hand margin of Part 7, since I would have undoubtedly filled the blanks in. Never mind Tim the angry giant red pickup driver, or rather angry Tim the giant, oh, you know what I mean, filled the blanks in too. Never mind Tim is not alive, and pickups aren't so giant. If the last 23 years were not an illusion, Tim would be alive, pickups would be giant, and I'd be asking when you last heard the word decorum. If you find it kind of nice to hear the word decorum and wish there were precious more of it going around, chances are you had a grandmother and great-great-aunt with names like Mabel and Myrtle. Chances are you sometimes forget the color of your blooms. Part 11. Some days I can't believe I've become someone who longs for the days when more decorum was going around. Someone who uses long as a verb and precious at all. Some days I can't believe my knees have wrinkles. That I count lawn mowing as exercise. That my mower's self-propelled. Some days I can't believe I still say honky-tonk. That I plant blue hydrangeas. That both my mother and my dad are angels now. Part 12. It's 2012, and I'm at a funeral home telling my friend Norman that I'm sorry about his mother, Pearl. It's been many years since I've seen Norman. Of course, we'll talk about the time he pulled me over in my Pinto, the time we hiked the Appalachian Trail. I once hiked the Appalachian Trail. "This is my friend William Blake Robinson," smiling Norman tells his granddaughter. "It's nice to meet you, Mr. Robinson," smiling Norman's smiling granddaughter says. Part 13. One day in 1704, a man appeared in England. He claimed to be Prince George Salmanazar, reformed cannibal from the island of Formosa, where men ate adulterous wives, 18,000 baby boys were sacrificed each year to an elephant god, and everyone wore snakes around their necks to keep them cool. Little wonder a historical and geographical description of Formosa, an island subject to the Emperor of Japan, was a bestseller. When a Jesuit missionary from Formosa asked about his fair skin, Salmanazar claimed he'd always lived beneath the ground. Sunlight would shine directly down an equatorial chimney, the astronomer Edmund Halley reasoned. Formosan chimneys are almost always built at crooked angles and containing bends, Salmanazar rebutted. "Yeah, and I'm Tammy Wynette," Sir Edmund might as well have said. Part 14. Well, I hit him hard right between the eyes, and he went down, but to my surprise, he come up with a knife and cut off a piece of my ear. Part 15. If the last 43 years were an illusion, Johnny Cash would be singing A Boy Named Sue on the jukebox in the Nashville honky-tonk where I'm drinking beer with my friend Norman, thanks to the likes of Tammy Wynette. In 4 years, I'll get a job in a psychiatric hospital and acquire a lifelong soft spot for those who cheer the cheerless. After that, I'll climb the Grand Teton, hike the Appalachian Trail, and develop an interest in ornamental shrubbery, which will lead to a delight in gazing balls. One day I'll gaze into my favorite, the deep blue ball with light green swirls. I'll find it hard to believe I've become someone who gazes into a deep blue ball with light green swirls, especially with the likes of William Blake drinking old Milwaukee beer in a Nashville honky-tonk, signaling to Tammy Wynette, but gazing out at me and saying, "Who the hell are you?"